Welcome to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. You are currently listening to the one-hour segment of our podcast. To listen and watch the full conversation, head over to politatine.com and click the Watch tab in the top right. If that's not your thing, we appreciate you and hope that you enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hey guys, my name is Varun Kadathal. I'm the co-host of the Politatine Podcast. Back again after almost a couple month long hiatus, Damien. It was a long time, and we've had a lot of stuff going on since then, as you guys know. In politics, we're here today with two different guests for the podcast, Navina and Pranati. If you guys want to first of all introduce yourselves and your roles with politics and how you got into this field, go ahead, Pranati, if you want to begin.
I'm Pranati. I am the vice president. I'm the vice president of ACLU Student Union. And actually, Navina got me into this because me and her had been talking about politics for a while. And when she opened up the ACLU, she let me in. And that's how I got connected to all of this. And it's been smooth sailing ever since.
Hi, I'm Navina Das. I'm the founder / president of ACLU Students. And I think I got into politics and actually started my organization after Black Lives Matter was a huge thing in last year in June. But ever since then, I've been really into politics and following controversies.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people got into politics, honestly. That's when we started our podcast. We actually just hit a year, May 29th.
Well, that was actually June. No, it was the beginning of June.
Yeah, it was the beginning of June, yeah. May 29th when we filmed the first episode.
But it was right after George Floyd was...
Our
podcast began as a reaction to that. And we began with no microphones, no cameras, just us two on a phone filming the podcast. It began like that. And it became something really, really profound. After more things uncovered, more deaths happened, we were more aware of those things, and we just grew as a podcast instead. And now we're back almost a year or more than a year after our first podcast and back again with two amazing guests. But go ahead, Damien.
Yeah, no, we didn't even do a one-year anniversary. We've been so busy.
We should have. We've been slacking.
But I think honestly, we just need to get back on that momentum and we'll finally start filming again. And today is that day. I'm really excited to have you guys on. There's a lot that's been happening, but one of the main reasons that we really connected with each other has been a hot topic issue that has been rampant in the state of Georgia and is becoming another political conservative talking point. And that is critical race theory. So I think that we have some agreements on the basis of critical race theory, and we have some disagreements on how to react to what our politicians are doing or what our politicians should do. So for those of you that don't know, critical race theory, in essence, is everything. Critical race theory is just what role race plays in day-to-day lives, in lifetimes, in school, in job opportunities, in financial statements, in pay stubs. It's absolutely taking into account everything that has to do with race and everything that has to do with life. There are lessons taught about American history and world history. And it's a very broad topic. So to ban critical race theory is essentially to throw a blanket on top of the ocean and say, there.
Yeah. No, I think to ban critical race theory would be just talking about the history of slavery and discrimination without addressing the fact that these things still exist in our nation. And it's what the conservatives want. They want to have us talking about the past and how we have overcame these flaws. And really, our nation is very much provincial. It's very much archaic in the way we treat African-Americans and minorities here in the United States. It is very much backwards. And I think that we need to address that as a nation. And the only way to do so would be to address some of the things that critical race theory is kind of bringing out there into the limelight. If you guys want to go ahead and provide your perspectives on CRT and its purpose in schools.
It, in general, bothers me that, first of all, CRT was never taught in Georgia schools up until this point. It was never something that's harped on. The fact that they have taken this and made it something political, even when it wasn't even in schools in the first place, is something that irks me. I've never believed in the fact that education, what we teach children, should be political. And the fact that it's becoming something political really bothers me, because this shouldn't be political. This shouldn't be an argument. This should just be, let's teach it. It's part of our history. It should be there. And the fact that it's not really bothers me sometimes.
Yeah.
And the concept of CRT could really empower people. So when it's actually been defined in various articles, CRT is the study of various historical figures and how they gained their freedom and rights in America. So actually teaching about that in schools could empower very many individuals in our education and allow them to understand why we're here today.
Yeah. We even barely address concepts that are uncomfortable for some people, including Malcolm X, including things like the actual horrors of slavery, like the whipping of people continuously. Some people in the South actually teach that slavery was, you know, masters were good to their slaves, that they wouldn't whip them as much, that they were treating them well, giving them food, giving them water, and that was a good thing. In my fifth grade class, I was taught that slavery was a good thing because slaves were given shelter, a free home, a free food. I was taught that by my teacher. And this is things that I've been taught in my schools, and I believe that we don't even address slavery as a big deal. And CRT, it's something that to me should be common sense, right? Taught in our schools, taught in our educational institutions to empower our children to solve the issues in the future. But when you can't even address something as simple as slavery, how do we get to CRT? How do we make that jump over here? So I think we have to address, first of all, the baseline knowledge of what slavery was and how it really exists today in terms of discrimination against people at the voting booths and things like that. And especially as we're going to talk about this later in our podcast today, it is really rampant today in terms of the voting rights laws, the against voting rights across the United States in places like Georgia, our own home state. And I think that is evidence, blatant evidence and physical evidence of these things still existing, of Jim Crow still existing in a different form. So,
yeah. And one thing that is important about it is, like, it's cool. You can teach, you know, the history of slavery, and you can teach it in a proper manner. Yeah. Whatever. You can teach what happened in, you know, prior to 1864. It doesn't matter, though. It's irrelevant in terms of just talking about that historical time period. We have to mention how historical time periods affect the next historical time period. And we still see repercussions from slavery in today's society. And that's where you get this disconnect between individuals when you talk about phrases like white privilege or like critical race theory. You know, it's this idea that the privilege is just at birth. No, you have a historical privilege because of things such as slavery, such as, you know, lower wages, such as the burning of Tulsa and of Rosewood and of Oscarville. The reason that there is this white, you know, superiority or white privilege, rather, that's being taught is because of historical events. But when you can't apply that and you're being just told that people are telling you that you have privilege because of the color of your skin, it irritates individuals. So actually teaching critical race theory will show individuals how to interact with each other.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Navina or Parathi?
I mean, I was just thinking about how we've been away from current events for a while. So if you guys could like brush up, especially Pranathi and Damien, about what we missed while we were gone, maybe we could discuss about that too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I don't know if you guys heard about what's happening in Texas right now.
Yep.
Yeah, Texas is a little bit. Wild. I think 53 Democratic senators from the state of Texas, state senators, that is, went to Washington, D.C. and left the special session that the governor called for. Like they just dipped. They were just like, yeah, we're not going to go to that. Right. Because you guys are passing restrictive voting rights laws. And so they went to Washington, D.C. to actually talk to Democrats in the federal Senate, in the country Senate, about how we can actually pass something on the federal level that will essentially eradicate what is happening in states like Georgia and states like Texas and states all over the country. That's a huge issue. And I think that it goes back to this idea that our state Senate and our state representatives are just important as their federal representatives.
Right. And I think that what happened there is they're passing, you know, laws that ban 24-hour voting and drive-through voting. And also they greatly expanded the discretionary authority autonomy of these partisan poll watchers. And also a bunch of laws restrict the ability of voters to vote and also made it harder for them to get to the polls. So I think that these things are obviously bad for democracy, obviously bad for expanding the vote. But you're seeing things like the John Lewis, the legislation on John Lewis and the For the People Act that can't pass Congress because you have a couple of naysayers on the left, for example, Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and they won't vote to break the filibuster. And that's why these bills cannot pass the Congress. It's because we have people who do not accept the dire consequences of what these Republicans are doing in states like Texas. And I think that no matter how many people go to Washington, D.C. and advocate for laws, like you said, Damian, that outlaw what's happening in Texas, this can't pass unless you have people on the center left like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to vote to abolish the filibuster. Because right now we're in a deadlock. We can't do much without Republican support. And as we're looking at it right now, they won't even support, for example, as Pranati was mentioning earlier in our internal group chat, President Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan. Even though 73% of America supports President Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan, the Republicans still will not support it. Mitch McConnell still will not support it. So I think that no matter what happens, no matter how many voters support what Democrats are saying, Republicans are still going to be against it because they're still morally tied to President Trump. And because of that, I think that's going to be the downfall of our nation for the next 4 years. The downfall of our democracy in the future, if we do not come to a compromise on these issues and Republicans don't think with their mind and with the actual ideology of their voters.
Absolutely. I think when I read it, it was a very powerful move for these senators to just walk out on this discussion. I thought that was insane. It was very, very, it was a bold move, I'll say that. And also the idea that you just have to, you blindly follow what you think who your president is and their morals is something that's very dangerous. I fully agree. And yeah, I mean, something needs to change. Someone needs to cave.
Yeah, I mean, the SCOTUS ruled on Arizona's voting restrictions earlier. They abolished a part of the Voting Rights Act that essentially was, you saw that, right? The Voting Rights Act abolishment. And that basically said that racial discrimination, as per the Voting Rights Act, was a very narrow category now. And that way there has to be substantial discrimination against minority groups for that to fall under the protections of the VRA. As being racial discrimination. So they narrowed the amount of cases that could be, described as that. Okay. That's what happened.
Yeah. And I disagree with both positions on this issue. I don't think that Republicans are at fault here. I think with all due respect to every single politician, Democrats need to grow some fucking balls. And I say that because they claim that, you know, oh, we're the party of the people and whatnot. And, you know, we love democracy and all this BS, but you finally have some Democrats that decide to walk out of the Senate and we're going to cover it for what, a week? And then the bill's going to pass and then we're done. I mean, like, it's the one time that I've ever seen Democrats take the high ground. Republicans take the moral high ground when they're in the valley. You know, they'll be in a ravine, they'll be underground, and they will convince people that they're right. I've never seen Democrats do that. And I'm happy that finally some Democrats in one state decided to actually do something for once. Now, I want senators that were elected here in my state, in Georgia, to actually do something, because John Ossoff and Reverend Warnock are not doing anything. I'm sorry, they're not doing anything. You guys are cool. You guys are getting votes. That's awesome. You know, you guys are taking seats away from Republicans, but just give it to them at that point. If you're not going to go and bully Joe Manchin using the bully pulpit, then just give up. Just let Republicans win next time.
Well, my question to you and all of you guys here is, even if Ossoff and Warnock bullied Sinema and Manchin into voting for something, would they actually vote for a bill like the Voting Rights?
No, but they would lose their next election.
No, I don't know if they will. Because the incumbency advantage is so heavy in the U.S. that they wouldn't lose the election.
Because you don't get to make all these empty promises and do all this campaigning and then go to Congress and do absolutely nothing about it. That's not the way this works.
I think so. But the voters are also speaking out against Manchin and Sinema. Like, there's so much opposition to what they're doing right now. I think that if they wanted to make a change, they would have done it. But they're so centered, they're so immovable that I think there's no other option unless, as Damian said, they get unelected. I think we should push for them to be unelected the next cycle. That's what I think. Yeah.
Well, we need to shift the voting block.
They might.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we can't take them out of office and they won't switch their positions. So I think the election is the only way that we can make a change in this process. And the only way we can do so is by, as a Democratic coalition, saying that is not okay. We stand for progress. We're a party of progress. And if you stifle progress, you should not be in office as a Democrat who is for progress.
I think that's just accelerated by Biden being president as well. Hate to break it to you, but Biden's not really doing anything either. And I think that has, like, I think that policy, like, his ideals have just pushed onto other political figures. So like Damian was talking about Ossoff and Warnock. I think it's just accelerated and his behaviors promote theirs as well.
Well, Biden spoke out against the voting restrictions a couple of days ago. He was very vocal about it.
Yeah.
And Biden has done stuff in office, obviously not for voting as much as
he
did. There is things he can do, but as a president, he's been a very good president, in my opinion, with the COVID recovery, stimuluses, everything like that. But I think that with this kind of voting rights block in many states, he has to be more vocal. But I think I saw a lot from him in the previous speech he made a couple of days ago, I believe. Or today, maybe. Was that when it was?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, I don't like Joe Biden as a neoliberal political candidate in the platform that he ran on. But he has been the most progressive and leftist president that we've seen since FDR. But that's not saying a lot, because who are you comparing him to? Henry Ford, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bush Sr. Like, it's not saying a lot that you're the most progressive president. But so going back, reverting back to what we were saying about, you know, bullying Manchin and stuff, it's not so much about the individual Sinema or Manchin. It's more about the voting bloc. And the problem is that the Democratic Party lets voters kind of feel like there's actually some like logical argument that the Republicans are making. Oh, like we should listen to the other side's arguments. And I just can't wrap my head around that side anymore, where like Democrats are trying to play this bipartisan game. It's not, you know, when you want 75% of Americans want, you know, more background checks, 73% of Americans want, to get out of the Middle East. You have 65% of Americans that want the minimum wage to be raised. So why do we keep playing around and toying around? We need to, the Democratic Party is we in this sense, even though I don't directly affiliate with the Democratic Party, but we need to actually get the Democratic Party and their platform and go, hey, we're leftist. Like we're not centrist. We are on the left, and we have a platform that believes in background checks. We have a platform that actually goes against what Republicans are saying. And we are going to pass voting rights bills. We are, in favor of minorities. Right now, the only reason that the Democratic Party is winning the minority vote is because it's either the guys that don't do anything against you, the Democratic Party, or the individuals that directly pass legislation that hurts you. So it's not that Democrats are doing anything for minorities. It's that Republicans are doing things against them.
It's more of a let's go for the person that isn't directly harming us more than actually going to do something for me.
Exactly.
It's a pattern with the Democratic Party. It's where they'll say they'll do all these things and they'll get to office and they'll just be like, well, let's just hear them out. Or the Republicans are not hearing anybody else out. They're doing what they think they need to do. So why are you sitting here trying to moderate, and why are you sitting here trying to hear people out?
Right.
Stand for your party and do what you said you were
going to do. But here's the question I have. Should we adopt our approach if it's so backwards, if it's so one-sided? Should we adopt their approach? Is it good of us to adopt that approach?
Yes, because
that's my question.
This ground thing isn't working. We got to try something different.
Yeah,
right. But we're talking about how bad their approach is and how they don't listen to anybody else. Should we let them recover and reform themselves, or should we take the full blast? We're going to become them.
The thing is, we've talked
for so long just about how bad what they were doing was, and now we're saying if they're doing a show,
Different. It's different. Bad is different when you're taking away women's reproductive rights and their autonomy from their body. Bad is different when you're not passing background checks that are causing students to die in schools. Bad is different when you're passing restrictive voting rights laws. So it's bad. What they're doing is bad because of what they're advocating for. They have amazing political strategists. They have some of the brightest minds in the political field. It's unfortunate that they're using it to kryptonite the American people. We need to adopt their political strategies and go, hey, we're going to raise the minimum wage because wage slavery is a real thing that is happening to individuals across America. Hey, we're going to raise the minimum wage and give free health care because free health care is something that, or health care in our system of health care, is something that is of a third world country in supposedly the richest country of all like human history, right?
So that's why it's bad. I get the point, but everything you're saying, we're saying. We're not saying any of that stuff. We're still saying it. We're still advocating for that. I've heard it multiple millions of times. But the problem is that they're not accepting. We have Manchin and Sinema.
I don't think so.
We're saying all of that.
No, I don't think our main politicians are saying that.
Would you think that Biden's saying that, Pronatier?
Free healthcare?
I think he is.
I've never heard Biden say that we should have free
healthcare. No, I think what you're saying, wage slavery is what he's saying. The people are Biden, in his essence, what he's saying, not the exact words, like slavery, but he's describing the policy. That's what he's.
I don't think so.
I'm going to say one more thing. The only reason I think the Republicans are getting away with the way they're doing this is because the Democrats are not there stopping them. The only reason they're
exactly
go this hard, go this heavy, and have these political strategies is because the Democrats are playing down. They're not being vocal about it. It's scary.
The thing is, the Democrats, the slogans that we use, and I'm saying we as I'm a Democrat, obviously, but the slogans we use are extremely, extremely powerful in my belief. They may be controversial. We still say them. We say things like ACAP. People think that means all cops are bad. That's a very powerful slogan. We got shat on for that very, very vehemently. And I think that we're saying a lot of things that we need to be saying. But the fact of the matter is so many people are so provincial in their ideas. We have to reach out to some people in rural districts, give them more education that's liberal leaning, have the youth speak to more youth. That's the way we do this. We can't just do it. There's no one solution. We can't just speak about a couple of things and action will come like that. I don't think that's the case. I think we do it by having a slow grind towards motivating youth in areas where they can't really get support. Because I'm here at GHP, Governor's Honors Program, and I'm sure you've seen it, Navina. The majority of the camp is, you know, liberal and progressive and democratic. But those who I've seen who are conservative are from these areas that are not well-educated, are from rural areas, and their families are, for generations, have been conservative. So I think that the way to reach these people is to reach them where they're at right now, because no matter what you say, no matter how vocal you are, their ears are deaf to what you're saying. That's what I believe in very strongly.
I fully agree with you, but here, what's the point of having all these powerful slogans if when these people get to office, they're not doing anything to actually make these powerful slogans a reality? I understand having powerful slogans is a very important thing, but when you're not doing anything when you're not doing to your full extent, what you're able to do to get these slogans to actually mean something, what's the point of having them? You're not going to do anything to make them a reality.
Well, then I ask about the For the People Act. That's a very broad legislation. It's something that's very controversial. That's not something Republicans are going to accept. We knew that on day one, but we're still working to pass that act.
But the thing is, we're working to pass it in the Senate. Screw the Senate. You're never going to convince Joe Manchin, right? You're never going to convince Joe Manchin to pass the filibuster. What you need to do is convince his voters that they want the filibuster passed. You see, and then again, talking about the slogans and whatnot, the problem is that you know, a politician will come out and say, ACAB, all cops are bastards. And then a Republican will go, he hates the police. And then this Democrat just falls, you know, flat on his ass. And he's like, oh, no, you know, I don't hate the police and blah, blah, blah. No, the problem is Democrats don't say it with their chest. And Republicans keep throwing and throwing and throwing and throwing and throwing and throwing and throwing. And Democrats just take the punches all the time. And there's never any counter. There's never any, you know what? Yeah, our police system is messed up. Our voting system is messed up. I do mean ACAB. I do mean defund the police. I do mean free healthcare for all. I mean it.
Yeah, we actually, I'm sorry, I just wanted to talk about that. We've all fallen into this middle ground. And I think I've specifically seen that in our parents' generation. Most of our parents are moderates. And they've fallen into this idea that, like, having the idea that all cops are bad and free healthcare is just like some idealized society, that we're never going to be able to attain it. And that's something that we could educate our generation about, but if we just keep being moderate and if we just let the Democratic Party take the punches, like Damian said, nothing's ever going to get done. And it's something that we could enforce if we like actually tried, but the more people that we see right now are just following into this moderate category and they're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned us enforcing the idea of all cops are bad. You meant all cops are part of a brutalized system, correct? Not all cops are bad.
They're bastards, Doug.
We don't believe that. We don't believe they're bad. We believe they're part of a bastardized system.
I think I do agree with the fact that they're part of the system that is bad. Right. They're not inherently bad.
Yeah.
Not individuals.
You said all cops are bad. So
no.
I'm just saying
I was going off of the slogan. ACAB, yeah.
This is purely my opinion, so I might be wrong, but I feel like with a lot of these Democrats, these slogans start as like this big headline. It's like, this is what I believe in. And the farther they get into Congress, it starts becoming like almost like a subtitle or like even fine print for some of these people. They use it as a way to get into office. And as soon as they get into office, it immediately goes a step down until they don't even talk about it anymore.
Well, to be fair, Ossoff and Warnock were running as moderates. They weren't running as these far leftists because their state itself is a moderate state. So you can't expect Ossoff and Warnock to become these like radical leftists as, you know, what's her name? that Robo woman.
Kelly Loeffler.
She called him a radical leftist. Warnock, something. Right? He was the most moderate person on the field. So I don't know why we're expecting Warnock and Ossoff to be progressives.
I don't expect them to be progressives, but I expect them to actually do something. You know, I expect it's like, I don't think that it's a progressive issue to allow your state to pass Restrictive Voting Rights Act, especially when you call yourself a son of the South and you literally preach at the same church where Martin Luther King Jr. preached. Like, I don't think that that's like, oh, you know, I'm being moderate here. I don't think that it's a campaign promise. I think that it should be a moral promise. And the fact that, you know, like, for example here, right? I think that the news cycle goes by very quickly. I think that news goes extremely quickly, but it always goes by extremely quickly on the left. Oh, what issue have we been talking about for the past 7 damn months? The fact that half of the country still believes that Donald Trump is president. Like, that is the most absurd thing, but we can't talk about free healthcare for more than a week. A school can't get shot up and 3 days pass and we're already talking about some other ridiculous issue. We have political ADHD. The left has political ADHD where we're just bouncing around everything and we don't do anything. And why is Donald Trump still on TV? I cannot understand. I can't wrap my head around
He's on OAN and Fox
every
News.
Day. And he's on MSNBC.
On MSNBC, but not
he's
CNN.
He's on MSNBC.
MSNBC is a far left leaning.
Yeah, he is, but they don't shut up about him.
I don't like MSNBC. Yeah. We can't control MSNBC, but that's a far left leaning channel. That's something that we can't really support.
Well, far left is a stretch.
No, I think they're, as a news channel, they're very far left and they're biased.
An American.
But in their bias, they're extremely far left Democrat. Every single time they have a news channel, they never talk about the Republican side of things.
Yeah.
They're not centrist. CNN, in my opinion, is the most centrist news channel that I've seen out there in television because they bring on conservatives. They try. They make an effort. Fox News, the opposite. OAN, the opposite. And MSNBC is like OAN of the left.
No,
in my opinion.
I don't think Trump, I don't know why Trump has a political platform at all anymore after everything that happened with the Capitol, because last I heard, Trump was planning on running for senator. So clearly he still has a political platform.
He's really?
Wow. Yeah,
I heard Trump was trying to run for senator. I don't know if it's true, but I remember reading about it multiple times.
I read about Ivanka Trump going for senator against Marco Rubio in Florida, but I did not hear about Trump. I don't know if he would take a down step from president.
I don't think so. He doesn't, his
ego
complex is too massive for him to go for president.
He's going to be back running for office in 2024.
In 2024, that's president. Yeah, he'll run for office.
But that's the thing, right? Like, how do you have this deadbeat running for office and still obtaining the support on, like, ridiculous? This is what I'm saying. We can't convince Democrats that we should get free healthcare, but the Republicans are convincing Republican voters that QAnon is a real thing. Like, how?
No, because Democrats aren't irrational. They're not irrational.
No, we are irrational because we don't. We're irrational. We're ridiculous. We're idiots because instead of being rational, we don't do anything. We haven't tried to convince. We haven't tried to educate.
And I think to make up for the fact that we've gone so far right, we need a wake up call from that. So we need like a really left person to get into office as well, because right now America's just disillusioned by Trump, and that's why there's so many people that believe in Trump's policies and believe that he can run for office again and be the greatest president ever. So that's why we need more left and progressive people to make sure that, like, education is being spread about what democracy actually is and how to actually enact on that.
I like the ideas being presented, but I think that we're thinking of it in very short increments of time. I think to make a full political transformation, it has to happen in decades of time, not just 4 years, not just 8 years, not just 2 years. We talk about socialism becoming an idea. That will take centuries to become a construct in America. It will take centuries, beyond our lifetimes, beyond our kids' lifetimes. I believe that strongly. And I think that for us to speed roll the process, have a far left person in office, it's way too early. I think we have to inch towards it, because if we disillusion a lot of people with what we're saying, we'd lose all of our support. I believe.
Yeah,
I think that
I understand what you're saying. Like, it has to happen over generations, but I just don't understand how we went from Obama to Trump, and the entirety of America just went.
Well, Trump wasn't far right. Trump was not far right.
Oh, pause. Obama's far right, dog.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is Trump was not far right on like what we have for previous generations. His policies were not far right compared to George W. Bush.
Wait, hold on. Do you remember his first 100 days?
Yeah, no way.
What I mean is George W. Bush had the same exact policies. He was xenophobic. He was racist.
No. But the difference is the bullhorn. Yeah, that's the difference. The difference is that it's a bullhorn and not a dog whistle.
I'm saying politically, Trump was not more far right than Bush or anybody else. He was just more outspoken about his racism.
Yes.
That's the
point.
So I don't know if we look at somebody who was...
But the problem...
And if you consider it as a political compass, Joe Biden is almost as right economically as Donald Trump.
Yeah. No,
almost
he
as
is.
Right economically.
So
why are we calling Trump far right? And I think that Trump
because
is just
Joe Biden's far right, too.
No, what I'm saying is he's a status quo for Republicans.
No.
He's a status quo.
I don't Trump. Think he's... Well, at this point he is.
Even when Bush was president, not in his speaking, but in his policies, he was a status quo. Because what in his policies did he say that was...
Well, the thing is, Republicans don't do anything. The Republicans
Reagan
don't do
was,
anything
Reagan
in their policies.
Trump. I mean, if we talk about Reagan historically, Reagan was Trump. So why are we calling Trump any different than previous history
because,
of the president?
Yeah, because Trump actually enacted on his policies. He made people afraid of him. And that's what I don't
did
understand.
Reagan, did Reagan not?
No.
No. Did Reagan not make people afraid of him?
No. People like
Reagan. Respected political figure.
But I think people respect Trump too. It's not a fear that guides them towards Trump.
No, I think it's a fear.
I respect Trump are Trump supporters that are hardcore Trump supporters that would ride it.
Right. We fear Trump, but Trump supporters respect him.
No,
they believe he's an
idol. I believe that Trump supporters are afraid of Trump as well. And I mean senators. I think that senators support him and won't shift away from him because they're afraid that. Once,
they're not afraid of Trump. They're afraid of his supporters. They're afraid
in
of his
essence,
supporters.
Trump is what he is because of his supporters. So
if Trump dies right now, Trumpism will remain. That's what I'm mentioning. Trump is it's the idea behind Trump that's going to guide supporters, against politicians who go against his ideas. Even if he dies right now, you'll still have that kind of a base. It's going to exist for generations.
True.
So I think the only way to do this.
No, I feel like I think I understand what you're saying as well. So maybe you're saying like that was always in people. So when Trump came along, he just, started it.
Yes, that's the idea.
He put fertilizer on a seed that was already planted. I agree with that. But the issue is that there's an equal platform, if not a more thirsty platform of the American people that want further left ideas. It happens in our youth, particularly. You talk about, socialism taking centuries to form. I think it's going to take decades. I think
for the
that,
entire world? For the entire world. Socialism as an economic policy.
Okay, but put aside, let's talk about the United States specifically. Right now, we're living in the United States. The United States has almost a domino effect on the rest of the world. Am I right?
No,
I don't believe so.
No, I disagree.
I don't believe so, because if we became socialist, we would lose our position everywhere.
We're so far right. The United States is so far right. Yeah. We're so
if we
far right.
Socialist, the world would not become socialist.
Yeah, I think it, socialist. No, I think it would because we're really far behind.
No, I don't think if we were already socialist,
so we would just be catching up at this point.
I think a lot of countries are more leftist. They're not socialist.
They're more left.
There's more left. They're more left.
They're more left.
Yes, I agree.
But when you say the word socialist, I assume like as in like no money and equal distribution of everything. That's what I assume. What you guys mean is democratic socialism, then that's what I'm. That's not what I'm thinking.
That still is socialism. Democratic socialism. Dem socks are still socialist.
No, socialism as an idea is different than democratic socialism.
No, democratic socialists are still. They fall on the socialist side of because they're anti-capitalists. Dem socks are anti-capitalists. Coming from sincerely yours, a Dem sock. We're anti-capitalist.
So are social democrats the ones who
social
reform capitalism?
Social democrats are completely different than democratic.
That's
socialists.
That's what I meant then. In that case,
social democrats are like, I don't even know how to explain it.
That's what's in Switzerland in the European states. It's
not
democratic.
No. They're liberals. Social democracy. It's like. I don't even know how to explain it.
I think of it as reform capitalism. You want to control capitalism to make it what its full potential is.
Okay,
that's what I've heard from my peers.
Democratic socialism, like, who do you think would be like a good pioneer of that? Or like
AOC?
AOC.
No, he's going to die.
Well, as in like a pioneer now or a pioneer in,
yeah,
in the
like
beginning
a,
of
a good head or like who do you think was a, yeah
like well, AOC and Bernie and who created okay. AOC and Bernie so
then when you think of actual socialism who do you think is like the face of that
AOC
I mean you can't say AOC for both if they're two different
yeah what? No there is no
wait
face
what was
of
the first one there's no face of socialism
no face
in
of
the
socialism
country not in the US
I know
yeah not so, in the US Bernie would be on the political right in like most European countries.
No, he would. Yes. No, I don't believe that.
Yeah, he would definitely be on the political right or a moderate. In the UK?
The political right.
Yeah. In the UK?
I do not believe that. In the UK?
Yeah. He would be on the right. Because what does he advocate for? He advocates for a higher minimum wage. The UK already has that. He advocates for free healthcare. The UK already has that. He advocates for gun restrictions. The UK has no guns. He's not. He'd be on the right. I know, dog. We're far behind. We're closer to fascism than we are to socialism. We're really far behind. We're
scarily behind.
I'll do more research and come back to you.
Go
I
for
do
it.
Not
go
believe
for it.
That.
That's what Hold it. On, no, that's what it for. That's what it's for. It's all about the disagreements. But nonetheless, so I feel like there's a vast majority of the American population that feels discontent. And that's why the right wins a lot of these votes, right? Because we're still running on a system of trickle-down economics, right? This idea that if we give tax breaks to individuals, that eventually that wealth trickles down to us. And the American people still believe this. The vast majority of the American people still believe in this American dream that we had when you could form a company essentially out of nothing. And there was, you know, a greater portion of your capital was disposable, right? You had more disposable income so you could spend more money. So small businesses were more likely to be more successful. But what the American people don't understand is that giving more money to the rich and condensing it in the hands of the few is not necessarily the solution. So you have half the country that thinks that they essentially can live the American dream in some capacity. And you have the other half of the country that is somewhat confused in just listening to the Democratic Party. And then you have a small portion therein and a big portion of the youth that goes, why are we going to be the first generation that makes less money than our parents? Why are we going to be the first generation that acquires a greater amount of debt for the same education that they received? Why are we going to be the first generation that's actually going to have a lower life expectancy than the generation before us? We acknowledge these problems and realize that we are on the right. So there is a big portion of the population that is prime, as ironically as Marx would put it, that is prime for revolution, right? Obviously not a violent revolution, but there is a big portion of the population that is discontent with their current socio-economic organization. But that population is being continuously manipulated by figures on the right to believe that their system of organization of the economy, more free market, is going to lead to greater success, economic success on the individual level for all Americans. Whereas the Democratic Party, and the problem with being liberal is we believe that too. You know, Democrats believe that the organization of the economy should be free market and should be, in essence, privatized. And we support individuals like Jeff Bezos and billionaires going to space when some people can't even afford to get cancer because it costs $400,000 a year in this country. The Democrats don't particularly care for that issue. So you have a kind of lost base and then a confused base. And if we get a figurehead that can actually correctly lead individuals to the left or to the further left, maybe like AOC. I don't think AOC is particularly the right figure. I don't think she's well-spoken enough. I honestly don't think that she's charismatic enough. And to be quite honest, I love her to death as a political figure, but I don't think that she could head a political movement. On nope. The other side, you already have this prime, right? Like you already have this base coat that the right has laid of fascism. And we're really close, and I have and will continue to call Donald Trump a proto-fascist. They don't need someone that can explain these crazy concepts that you know, labor market theory, all of these ideas that need to be explained to the American people. All they need is someone that is well-spoken. I continuously think of Benjamin Netanyahu. They need someone that's well-spoken and can essentially do what Donald Trump did with swag. Put a little bit of spice on what Donald Trump did, make it look cool, make it look clean, make him attractive, make him a Harvard graduate, and you have a fascist country in the next 10 years.
So Ron DeSantis?
Nah, bro, he's clapped. Nah, he's clapped.
Ron DeSantis speaks well.
Yeah, but he's clapped.
Okay, you want him to look good? All right.
Yeah, he has to look good.
Where do you think?
But here's one thing I had, and I noticed this in a lot of speeches that we've made in the past on this podcast. We continuously, and hear me out here, we blame Jeff Bezos for spending his money, but we don't blame our government for not taking his money in terms of taxes.
I do.
We totally bring up Jeff Bezos over and over and over again. But if the government does not tax Jeff Bezos, why are we mad at Jeff Bezos for going to space?
I totally agree with that, actually. Yeah. I think Jeff Bezos, for how much he worked and how much he put into investing in his company and, you know, growing it, he has the entire freedom to do whatever he wants with that money. But for the government to allow him to get to that point, we should be blaming the government for sure.
Yeah. It's not his fault. If you manipulate a system that's broken, that's not... I mean, shoot, if you put $1 million in front of me and say that, you know, like, no one has this $1 million, like, blah, 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 I'm going to take it.
Jeff Bezos came from a wealthy position. He came from an extremely poor position. He built money. So it's not like he was given $1 million like Donald Trump.
Can you blame Jeff Bezos for taking advantage of the broken system? Yeah, you can't blame him.
Exactly.
No.
Even took advantage.
Just because I wouldn't do it doesn't mean I would blame him for doing it. It's his choice. It's his life.
He brought himself to that state. He brought himself to such a great stance in society. And I mean, it's not really taking advantage because he wanted to do something novel and he definitely got something out of that. So the fact that he did that and he's getting its benefits is commendable for him. Just like Vern said, not many people would do it, but still.
Jeff Bezos is actually self-made. He has the right to reap.
Exactly.
I don't think I blame Jeff Bezos. I'm just saying maybe he should use a platform for something better, but I'm not saying it's his fault or not. Poor position. You can't blame the guy.
My issue is we demonize Jeff Bezos and not the government, which supports him.
Yeah, no, because even on the right, it's a neoliberal organization of the government, right? It's this idea that we kind of let these people do their own thing. And in essence, I understand what you're saying, but I think that we demonize Jeff Bezos as the rich, as the billionaire, because that is in essence what the opposition is too, right? You have this base of young individuals who go, we want to get rid of individuals like Bezos, particularly the aspect of how much wealth they have, not the individual themselves, but we want to get rid of that individual's wealth and reinvest it into our country. So we'll put him as the figurehead, almost as the scapegoat, right? Almost as this icon of what we don't want. Because I think that it is absurd that you have individuals that are going to space when mothers can't afford food for their children, right? So that's ridiculous. Again, you can't particularly blame Jeff Bezos and expect him to solve world hunger or expect him to solve American hunger for that capacity. But what you can do is go, why did Amazon pay $0 in federal taxes? Right? You can do that.
Yeah.
Amazon should have 100% been taxed, and the fact that they didn't blows my mind. It's a broken system, and that's what we need to fix.
Yeah. And I wouldn't blame Amazon. They took advantage of a broken system. You know,
that's what I'm saying. There's
to them, it's the broken system's fault.
I'd still blame them. Listen, I blame them. I blame them because it's a bad thing to do. I'm not gonna take away the blame from them. But yeah. You see what they're doing. I would do it too, and you could blame me. Are you
they want to make money. That's a capitalist dream. Companies want to make money.
Yep.
So
I don't think we get to demonize these multimillionaires for, again, taking advantage of a broken system. It's not their fault. They're doing what they think they need.
Yeah.
Did you guys see what's his name's wife? Bezos' ex-wife, right?
She's giving money. She's throwing money.
I remember you talked to me about this. You were like, well, she's giving away $2 billion. You were like, she's giving away $2 billion a year. You know, after she decided to give that away, she started profiting $7 billion like every six. Like, she's making $14 billion a week. So she literally, Yeah, she makes the money that she donates back in like a half beat. Like
teachers literally can't get rid of their money fast.
They can't.
They can't. So the fact that here's my thing. It's a two-way street. I both blame Bezos and don't, because he could very easily give away his money and make it back in minutes. The fact that he doesn't blows my mind, but also
that's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
No. The conservative argument is that people can give away their money to replace welfare programs. So if we expect them to give away their money, we're falling into their trap. We have to promote welfare programs as opposed to blaming Jeff Bezos. Oh,
based Varun?
That's
socialist Varun?
No, that's not socialist. That's not socialist.
Did you just say support welfare programs? Social safety
that's not
net?
Socialist. No, that's not socialist. That's a liberal idea.
What happened at GHP, buddy? You want to talk about
that? That is a liberal idea.
It's not a liberal idea.
Fundamentally liberal idea.
No, liberal ideas are supporting a welfare state, which I am opposed to, because a welfare state essentially gives you enough crumbs to where you don't starve, but will never give you a full course meal. And that's the problem with politicians like Joe Biden. That's the problem with politicians like John Ossoff. That's the problem with the Democratic Party, where they'll say, hey, listen, you're really poor. So instead of raising your wages, we're going to give you a check and some food stamps.
Oh, yeah.
That'll put a gallon of milk in your fridge, right? It'll put a gallon of milk in your fridge, but your lights are going to have to be off because you can't afford to pay the bills. But if this month you have the lights off, next month you'll have the water off. And if you save enough water, then we'll reward you with another stamp. Like, that's the problem with the welfare state. Instead of just going, hey, why don't we just raise the minimum wage? I don't know, like $27 an hour.
Right. I think Peter the Great in Russia did the exact same thing to retain his support amongst the people. He would basically go out. I believe it's Peter the Great, one of the Russian monarchs. But he would go out and he would say that I'll give you these small reforms to keep the people from revolting against him. And it worked for a long time because he was appeasing them. But it didn't increase their social standard, because as more they were getting appeased, they were still falling privy to the same, you know, concerns they were falling privy to before.
You become content.
It's just like constant appeasement.
Yeah, right. It's content.
I think if the cost of living is the standard of not the cost of living is getting higher, why is the minimum wage growing with it? Why is it becoming more and more expensive to lead a life in the United States, but at the same way we're not increasing minimum wage? That is the issue.
But we are increasing social safety programs.
So, like, when we're talking about socialism, especially for like poor people, when we do increase the minimum wage, when we do give all these benefits, there's always a concern that moderates have that they're going to get content with their lifestyle, and maybe they're going to fall back on some bad habits that they have, and they're going to decrease their, you know, lifestyle to, I don't know, like doing drugs every day or something like that. So how are we going to like defeat that stereotype and also have like an increased minimum wage for the people who deserve it?
Well, Varun, I think you would go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, this is an argument that you would make, the argument that people become lazy inherently after.
No,
they...
I don't.
That's exactly what my parents make. So,
well, that's not the exact argument I would make. That's what I would say with socialism, not with democratic socialism, with social democratism. That's if you have no profit incentive whatsoever.
If you
have zero profit incentive whatsoever for somebody to work, then that's the case. But if you have some kind of an incentive to gain more money, to have some kind of a better life, that means you're doing more work inherently. But if you have zero profit incentive and all you're doing is for the community, that's my argument. If you get no money, if you get no ramifications of your own work, then you will not work.
I disagree.
You will be content with who you are. But it's social democracy. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm saying I don't know where I stand on this, because I do see both points of view. I do see saying how if everyone gets the same amount of money, why would anybody do more than the bare minimum? I see that, but I also see how maybe raising the minimum wage and helping people get back on their feet will also do good. It's a fork in the road, and I see both points of view.
There isn't a fork, it's a mirror in the road.
I want to challenge this concern, because Damien, you'll challenge this like example. For example, think about if you go to school and you have no grades whatsoever. Would you do work or would you stay content with your work? And he's going to contest this idea,
if you were asking me, and if we actually promoted education more over like grade standpoint or over like standardized tests, people would go to school to learn. That's what.
Do you think that your friends would do it? Would all your friends do it? I know 70% of the classes that I'm in.
I actually associate with really good people, and they go to school to learn.
The majority of students at my school still don't learn for the purpose of learning. They learn, not even for a grade point average, they're still bad students. And if you take away that profit incentive, that kind of incentive.
Hey, there it is.
No,
listen.
No one's going to try.
No, there is the incentive. Hold on. I will respond to all of this incrementally at one segment at a time. Let's talk about the drug use, right? Let's talk about the fact that individuals will become lazy. Well, actually, studies and significant studies have shown that when there's a lower standard of living and a higher cost of living, drug use goes up. First of all, there is no problem, I believe, with drug use if it's you're talking about marijuana and whatnot. But people actually get lazier. People get more obese. They suffer more health consequences when they're actually making less money and have access to less social safety nets. Now, let's talk about the profit incentive and the myth behind the profit incentive, right? So first of all, the profit incentive is absolutely bogus. And I'll tell you why the profit incentive is absolutely bogus. It's not a profit incentive. It's a life incentive. If you want to live, you have to work two jobs. If you want to be able to put food on your table, you have to work two jobs. That's what the United States has come to, right? So instead of saying that you're going to go to work in order to have this profit incentive, that is slavery. And I'll tell you why it's slavery, because if you're doing something that you do not want to do every day from 9 to 5 in order to keep on living a life that you do not want to keep on living, because you have to be able to pay rent, you have to keep the lights on, you have to keep the electricity on, you have to keep the water on, then that in essence and quite literally is slavery. So if we suffice and we supply Americans with the basic needs, low housing, access to healthcare, access to education, then you actually see that individuals get happier. I saw a sign that said, build the wall and crime will fall. Raise minimum wage and crime will go away. That's the solution, because we've known this since Greco-Roman times, right? The lower a person's socioeconomic status is, the more inclined they are to commit crime. Well, your socioeconomic status isn't always going to be deemed by how much money you're making, because you can be making, I talk about this all the time, the employment, right? Unemployment in the United States can be 0%. You can have every single person employed in the United States for, and that still won't solve everything. Because if you have every single person employed, but you're paying them wages that aren't livable, what's the point? Whereas you could have 50% employment in the United States, but know that the other half of the population has access to what they need to just survive, right? There's a difference. Now, going back to the grades thing, first of all, our academic system, that's just ridiculous, and it's built on an incentive that does not work for all students. And I know this because I know individuals that work 8 times harder than me, 10 times harder than me in school, and will never have the same grades that I do. They pay for tutors, they pay for whatever, and they won't have the same grades that I do. But nonetheless, when you're forcing students to learn things that they do not find interest in, when you're forcing individuals to go into employment into fields that they have no interest in, then you're actually going to see less productivity in students, and you're going to see less productivity in employees. So when you tell someone go work or go study in a field that interests you, you're going to see an increase in productivity, because there's two key words that go hand in hand: productivity and passion. Varun, we don't get paid for this podcast, but we still do it. And we still do it.
This is a hobby, not a job. I would not work a podcast for this many hours of a day if it was bringing me nothing.
Exactly. But you do it because you love it.
No, but
you do it because you
own it. In a world of billions of people, and billions of people do not agree with your standpoint, Damien. That's my perspective.
I mean, billions of people are never going to agree with.
I think 70% of people are not at the level that we are in terms of how much we want to impact the world. We're a different set of people than a lot of people.
But individuals have different interests.
Would some of our friends do the podcast that we're doing for example, in our prime, 3 hours a week? No, I don't think so. And I think that I'm going to end on this because we don't have that much time left over. But I think one thing that I agree with you on, and we can come to a compromise on, is that we conservatives and middle grounders often talk about equality of opportunity. That's a fallacy. That's a myth, because equality of opportunity equals equality of outcome for the person who works a minimum hours a day, and puts their work in. So I think that's a myth, first of all. But I think there should be a profit incentive. If you work for a certain amount of hours per day and do your work and do hard work, there should be a profit incentive beyond that point. There should be a baseline living income, obviously. I agree with that. A $15 minimum wage, basic living income, basic healthcare. I agree with that. But what I think is that we should have a profit incentive for those who go above and beyond what the average is. That shouldn't be a thing that's not allowed for us. because we should reward those who are doing more than the average.
Cool. I agree with that.
That's all I'm advocating for.
Yeah, that's fine. It.
The profit incentive is good, but I think there should be no people who are homeless. That's all, all I'm with today.
I'm cool with that.
I feel like we all just said the same thing. It's a different word.
But I feel like there should be also a... Okay. I clean my room, and I don't get paid to clean my room, but I clean it because I own it. I clean it because it's something that I have interest in. So I'm actually against the minimum wage. A lot of people know that. I talk about it all the time. I'm against the minimum wage. I think that the minimum wage should be $0. I think that we should allow unionization. Because the problem is when you have one individual that controls the whole system of labor, right? You have one CEO. That individual has a monopoly on every single employee. But when you have a union, you have the group of workers that have the power. Why do we not put the power in the majority of the people as opposed to putting the power in one individual? Because Jeff Bezos can raise his minimum wage to $15 an hour to shut up the union. You know, shut up, sit down. That's what he did. A lot of people don't know that the only reason that he raised the minimum wage was because he didn't want his employees to unionize. Yeah. So when
I do want to let Pranati and Davina speak about this before we have to end, though, because we only have 5 minutes left over in the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to go first? Okay. I'll end. I mean, you can go first.
But no, you go. Go ahead. I need a minute to gather my thoughts.
Okay. Well, I think what you said right, like just before this, I think that makes sense. I think that, like you said, minimum wage is an incentive, and you know, minimum wage, like, you can't survive off of that, even if you do raise it to, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I think you can, but you'd be working a job that you really hate, or, like, you'd be working at, like, McDonald's or something that you don't really want to do. I also understand that you can do such minimum jobs to get to the place that you want to get to, but how many people have that, like, motivation to do that and then keep climbing the ladder, and finally you're, like, in middle ages and you just have no idea where you're going next. So there's, like, a lot of work to be done, for sure.
Okay, so this is my piece. I'm going back to what Damien said about productivity and passion. So let's start with X. Let's talk about school. Let's talk about high school. You make the system a pass-fail system and say, tell students, study what you believe in, study what you enjoy, do this. Automatically, productivity is going to go up. When productivity goes up, people go into jobs they enjoy. They actually earn the quote unquote minimum wage. I think that way more than equality, I think it's equity. I think you, I don't know if I'm wording
right there.
I don't think it's equality that we need. I think it's equity.
We need to provide
people what they need to be successful. Not everyone getting the same thing isn't equality. That's not how you.
I think you're mentioning equality of opportunity. That's a conservative argument, middle ground argument, actually. You'd be surprised to see it.
Oh, well, no. Equality of opportunity
equality
refers
of opportunity
to
is
essentially...
What moderates, this is what moderates counter the socialist argument of equality of outcome with. That's
But the equality, right, the equality of opportunity is only based off of the fact that there is a chance for you to be able to climb the social ladder, right? And the chances of you being able to climb the social ladder are extremely minimal inside of the United States at its current stage. First of all, you have to have an entrepreneur, you know, mindset to begin with, and not every individual wants to be an entrepreneur. But that doesn't mean because you can't start the next Amazon that you should be homeless. Beyond that, I just think that we should look at the Swedish. I incentivize you to look at a Swedish system of education and a Nordic system of education, because honestly, they organize their schools. I mean, you have Greta Thunberg, right? You have these amazing individuals that come out of these systems of education that aren't actually grade incentivized or SAT incentivized. Speaking of which, you know, College Board is a monopoly. But with that being said, education, everything that we mentioned, this is all stuff that we all advocate for. If you guys want to plug your social medias, where they can find you and where we can all become more political active and have those discussions, feel free to. What are you guys' @s? Where can they find you? Where can they find ACLU students?
So it's @ACLU_students on Instagram. You can also email us. We have studentsofaclu@gmail.com, and we're working on our YouTube channel. You can find a bunch of outlets primarily from our Instagram.
Awesome.
All right. Have to go.
Individual @s that you guys want to mention real quick.
Oh, I'm Pranati_Sway, PRANATI_SWAY.
I'm Navina underscore Doss.
There you go.
Okay, we got to go.
All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode of the podcast. Peace out.
Bye-bye.
That concludes the hour segment of this podcast. To listen to or watch the remainder of this episode, head over to polititine.com and click the watch tab in the top right. Beyond that, thank you for listening to another episode of Polititine.